time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 23rd of November 2013. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirawa. On Saturday the 23rd of November, Christina Patterson was joined by Kirsty and Wendy Richards to talk about the Bully Project. She spoke to Amelia Lawley from the Waiheke Budgeting Service about water management, and she discussed that government's asset sale program with MP Denise Roche and Jacqueline Taylor.
I'm actually just inviting to the studio now, welcoming Kirsty Richards and Wendy Richards, sisters on the island. Hi, Kirsty and Wendy.
Hi.
Hi.
Now, just wondering if you could tell us, first of all, why are you concerned about bullying?
I personally am concerned about bullying because there was a situation with my child and his friend where they were being bullied quite severely, all happening under the radar. Nobody knew about it. They didn't tell anybody. And it was having a serious impact on them, and we were unaware of what was going on. Put it down to just being moody teenagers, and it was a lot more serious than that.
Right. So are you able to go into the details of how serious it was?
It was that they were being told to kill themselves every day, that they should kill themselves, that they should drink bleach, that they should cut themselves, jump off a building, that sort of thing. And to me, that is life-threatening behaviour because kids are acting on this.
Yeah, because there's been a real obvious link between bullying and suicide with some young people. And so that would, I would imagine, I mean, you know, when you discovered this, how did things go then?
I tried talking to my son about it, but everything's fine. You know, nothing bothers him, so he says. But I approached the school about it, and I have to say they were fabulous. They took it really seriously. They were very caring, listened to what we had to say, and I'm really pleased with the support that we received from the high school.
Yeah.
It was really, really good, and can't actually speak highly enough of them at the moment because I found them to be great.
Yeah, that's really good. Mm. And as a result, what action has taken place?
There was some consequences for the boys. I mean, I don't want to go on it too, you know, into detail too much, but there was consequences for the boys, and a closer eye has been kept on my child and his friend to make sure that they're okay, and they know that there's somebody safe they can talk to if there's any problems. They know that there is someone that they can always go to, and they trust that he will keep an eye out for them.
Is there pressure on children to not say anything because then they are then bullied for being a narc or whatever the word is nowadays? But, you know, is that pressure there as well for them?
Absolutely, yeah because it's they don't want to tell because they think that things will get worse for them, and of course quite often they do, and so therefore they won't tell anybody. They won't tell their parents, they won't tell their teachers, they just don't talk about it. They just internalise everything.
Yeah.
Mm.
Do you want to share your experience as to why you've been concerned about bullying in schools?
Like Wendy, I'm not going to go into lots of details, but my son had ongoing issues for a number of years with different kids. And I could see the effect that it was having on him as well. And a lot of the time he wouldn't tell me what was going on, and it would come to me secondhand. And it has a huge effect. I mean, I've had experience myself personally, and, you know, it affects your self-esteem, your confidence, how you feel about yourself. I mean, even as an adult, sometimes I look back to something and think, oh, that relates to how I was bullied as a child. It's a huge, huge issue.
Yeah.
You know, and parents and schools and teachers, they all need to take it seriously. Mm. And, you know, our kids are important. You know, they really are important. It has a huge effect on their lives.
Yeah.
Not just now, but in 20 years' time.
As an adult.
Yeah.
So, and I've just played, obviously, that clip which I got from your site, but about Chloe, who experienced cyberbullying, Facebook, that kind of stuff. Did your children, have your children experienced that you know of?
I won't allow my son on Facebook, partly because of the cyberbullying, but also because there's a lot of material on there I don't think he should have access to. I think parents need to be really aware of what their kids are doing on Facebook, what sort of pages they're looking at, how they're communicating with other kids, what other kids are saying to them. You know, this is if your child's being bullied online, on Facebook, for example, it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They don't leave school and the bullying's over for the weekend. It continues.
Yeah. So if they're on Facebook and if they have a mobile phone, chances are that if they're being bullied, that may be extending into that area of their life as well.
Yes, it does.
And it seems that it's quite easy for parents to not necessarily know to what extent, from what I've gathered. So what I'm wondering is, the policewoman who spoke on that clip talked about... She said that children are sometimes reluctant to tell their parents because they don't want Facebook to be taken away from them. And so she was saying that not to have that response, but instead help their child to navigate the whole thing. How do you feel about that?
I would agree with that, because you don't want them not to speak up because they don't want to lose Facebook. I think you need to, like I say, you need to monitor what they're doing. And if there are kids bullying your child on Facebook, it needs to be reported.
Mm. And, you know, I think understanding, she was saying, you know, that not having... I don't know how Facebook works, or, you know, is not... She was suggesting that it's really got not enough for parents to say that, is it? So they need to know how to do blocking and reporting and all of that stuff, don't they?
If they don't know how Facebook works, then they really shouldn't be letting their kids be on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to monitor them. You have to. It's dangerous. It's a dangerous world out there.
Mm.
Now, with, you know, cell phones and Facebook and various other social media, I mean, it's in the news all the time.
Mm. So tell me about the Bully Project, because since this has happened, you've set up a Facebook group called the Bully Project. Can you tell us about what is the Bully Project and why did you set that up?
Well, I've been following the Bully Project in America for about a year. I came across it on Facebook and really liked what they were doing. They're changing some of the worst schools in America that have got such terrible problems with bullying, and a lot of children do commit suicide. And they made a movie, a documentary, and that's part of the program, is that movie's played in schools. The kids get to see the real results of bullying. They talk to families who have had children that have committed suicide because they've been bullied. They show real footage of a child being bullied. And it really impacts on the kids because they're actually seeing the reality of it.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, is it... If a child is suicidal, will that have an effect? You know, when they see that not suicidal. If they're seeing how the consequences of those things, that really makes a difference to them. Because I suppose sometimes we think, well, if they're bullies, do they really care? Do they really care about these consequences? Does it really impact them? Does it change what they're doing?
It, from the footage I've seen, and I've had some contact with the Bully Project in America, it does seem to be changing things. And also, because they are educating the whole school, and that bullying is not okay. Yeah. And they've got, you know, they'll have, they've got posters up everywhere. They've got kids making posters. Everywhere you go, it's like, this is a safe zone. There's no bullying allowed here. There's a principal. The principal makes a pledge that he or she will not tolerate bullying in the school. And there are safe zones for the kids to go to.
And what are the consequences if in these schools if they are having, if someone is bullying a child? What sort of, is that part of the project, certain consequences?
It's not part of the project as such, because it's more about preventing it from happening.
Right.
So the whole idea is to prevent it happening, and by letting all the kids know about bullying and about the consequences, you get other kids that are watching, seeing what's happening. They see someone being bullied and they think, you know, actually that's not okay.
Mm.
And they will go and tell somebody.
Yeah.
So it's not under the radar anymore.
So, I mean, obviously you've had your experiences with your kids, but having set up the Facebook group on Waiheke, and I notice you've got over 100 people have joined that group. How widespread, I mean, it doesn't actually, in some ways, in my opinion, it doesn't actually matter how widespread it is. If one child is being bullied, you know, that is enough to be important, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
But I'm just wondering, what are the responses you're getting from the parents that have joined your group about whether this is a widespread problem on Waiheke?
I've had quite a bit of feedback from parents who tend to message me personally rather than putting things on the page, and they're very concerned. Some of them have children that are being bullied that they're very concerned about. Some parents have removed their children from schools and sent them to other schools in town because they've been bullied. And a lot of the time they don't feel like they're being heard and that their concerns aren't taken seriously.
Yeah. So obviously that's a concern for you. Is that something that you're trying to work with schools on, or what are you hoping to achieve with your, I guess, with your Bully Project and with your Bully Project Facebook group?
I am hoping that our schools will all put a program in place.
Yeah.
Schools in Auckland are doing it. I think it's only going to be a matter of time before all schools will have an anti-bullying program in place, and that's what I want to achieve, so that our kids can learn in a safe environment. They haven't got the constant stress of worrying about what's going to happen at lunchtime, or what's going to happen when they're walking home from school, what's going to happen when they go to the toilets, you know, if someone's there. It's, you know, they shouldn't have all these concerns. Mm. And, I mean, this isn't a new thing. This isn't exclusive to Waiheke.
Mm.
This has always been a problem in schools.
Yeah.
My mother was bullied as a child. You know, you can go back and back and back, and you'll find that, you know, people have been bullied for such a long time.
Mm.
But now's the time to change it.
Yeah. I guess one of the things about school is that they only have control over what happens within the school. And I suppose being quite a small community as well, that it's likely for that child to see that bully frequently outside of school. Would that be true?
Yes, I'd say so.
Yeah.
Yeah, being a small place like Waiheke.
Yeah, and as well with social media. So what do you think will help in terms of outside of school premises or social media? Because I notice, I mean, obviously with Chloe's Law in Australia, she's concentrating on Australia, which I think is really commendable. I think it's amazing that she's trying to change the law in her whole country. Is that something that you would want to see in New Zealand?
Yeah, I think that'd be great. I mean, they are talking about legislation for cyberbullying. It's $3,000 fine, or I think it's 3 months in jail.
Yeah.
And I think that's great because there does need to be consequences. There needs to be a deterrent more than a punishment for when this has actually happened. There needs to be something to deter people from actually doing this.
Mm. Now, we started a survey over the last few days, and I'll bring it up and... throughout the program people can comment. Actually, that if you want to find the survey on bullying, where if you've got any children in a Waiheke school, we're just encouraging you to take a minute to say whether or not your child has experienced bullying, and it takes about a minute or 2 minutes to complete it, and you can find it on the Bully Project Waiheke Island, which is Wendy's Facebook group that she started, and you can find it on the Waiheke Community Notice Board, and you can find it on Waiheke Island People's Parliament. So we're encouraging people to just do that survey so we can get an idea as to what the issues really are for Waiheke. And, you know, it's been throughout the nation. So it's clearly an issue for parents at the moment. So it would be really helpful if people can do that. And I will actually report on some of the results. Last time I looked at the results, it was one of the comments was made that, you know, would you like to see harsher, probably not the best word, but harsher consequences for bullies or bullying? The majority of parents, regardless of whether their child had been bullied or not, were actually saying yes, they would like to see that. So I spoke to Tony Sears the other day. He's the deputy principal of Waiheke High School. And he did say to me that they he said to me quite a few things, but one of the things he said was that they have a responsibility to the child who is also the bully, and the sense that that person is a member of the community, and I guess there's the issue around, there must be issues around why that child is bullying in the first place, I'd imagine, but I guess they have some kind of obligation to work with that child as well. So and just interesting, you know, obviously I invited the schools to come and speak on the radio this morning, and I had two decline, and one said that they were unavailable today to speak. Any response about that?
I'm a bit disappointed that they didn't come and speak about it. I can understand why. To a degree, it's a really busy time of year, and there's been exams, and a couple of the schools are in transition. I'm sure you heard all this too. But it would have been nice to have the schools take on it and see how they actually feel about it. And I know that they have policies in place, which is good, but personally, I don't think that's enough. Yeah. It's like locking the stable door after the horse is bolted. You know, I don't want kids needing to be fixed after they've been bullied and their self-esteem is now in the toilet. You know, it's like I'd like to see it prevented.
So the suggestion was that if a parent had concerns to come as individuals to the school, what I can tell, and bearing in mind that with the survey we've only got a small number really, there's of parents responded so far, but it's fair to say that any parent, their viewpoint is important, I would think, and some of them were definitely saying that they felt that it wasn't enough, that they had gone to the school and they hadn't got the response that they were looking for. So Yeah, and I think the suggestion was that if perhaps that they didn't want to have trial by radio, which is, you can actually, you know, that to me sounds fair, you know. And I had made the suggestion, and perhaps, and I don't know what you think, you know, that perhaps if there are a number of concerned parents, that a meeting, you know, holding a meeting or making a statement via newspaper might be helpful, because I had suggested that if they are seen to be silent, and they may not be silent, but if they are seen to be silent, that parents may feel that in fact they're not, you know, they're not really being heard, or that they care, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So in fact, you know, I don't know, it might be disappointing, but perhaps by radio is not. We've got two new principals who've really just arrived, and they probably need to get their head around a lot of stuff. And one of the principals, which was Waiheke Primary, Kathy, she said that she would be willing to come on next year and talk about bullying. So, any further comments about that?
Well, I mean, I think it would be great, you know, if they did come next year and talk about bullying. This is a real issue. Like I say, it's not just on Waiheke. It's not pointing the finger at Waiheke schools. It's just what happens in schools, yeah. And we can change it. Mm. And we need the school support. We need their backing.
Mm.
And parents have told me that they don't feel heard and that they don't feel supported, and they need to be. You know, they've got concerns about our kids are at school for, you know, a certain length of time every day, and we want to know that they're safe.
And why do you think, because, I mean, obviously through the survey we've had parents saying, oh yeah, they dealt with it brilliantly, and then we've got other parents saying it was just appalling, and I had to, I know, as you've said, families who have literally taken their children out and moved them to an Auckland school where they've had to pay for their commute to a school where the approach towards bullying was different, and they felt that their child was safer there. So so why do you think we're getting some parents who feel that that it's going really well and other parents that don't?
Sometimes I think it depends on the person that you're in contact with. Like I say, I've been really lucky. And then other people have spoken to people at school and felt they've had no support at all. So sometimes it's about finding the right person at the school to talk to.
And I suppose if there's a program in place, the response is consistent, isn't it? Instead
yes.
of getting one person who's supportive and another person who isn't.
Yeah, because they've got steps in place. And also there is a certain way that they deal with parents, because it's when you've got parents who are upset because they're worried about their children, think you've kind of got to handle them with kid gloves a little bit, you know, just to let them know that they are being heard, that you are taking their concerns seriously, and that you will investigate.
Mm. Yeah. So any advice from two parents who are concerned about, you know, perhaps parents who don't, first of all, parents who don't, as far as they know, their child is not being bullied. How might they know that their child might be in trouble in this area?
Things like their appetite changes, their sleeping habits change. They might be really anxious and nervous, grumpy and moody. Like I say, you can put that down to just being a teenager, which is really difficult, not wanting to go to school, getting stomach aches, headaches, becoming sick quite a lot of the time, and also becoming very depressed.
Yeah, okay. And what advice would you give them if they're, you know, to I guess open the communication with their children?
It's really, really hard with a teenager, and sometimes it might actually be easier to talk to their friends and see if they have noticed that anything's going on at school. Definitely talk to the school and get them to keep an eye on things and just see if they observe anything, if any other teachers have observed anything. There are always signs there that the child is being bullied.
Right, okay.
They don't just breeze through life and carry on as happy as, you know, happy as they always have been, because they change completely.
Yeah. Okay. So it's really noticing their behaviour and actually paying attention to it, and not passing it off as just ordinary teenage angst.
Definitely.
Which is often, I imagine, would be what parents might draw the conclusion. Yeah,
well, that's what I did. You know, that was the conclusion I came to. Oh, well, it's, you know, that age, moody teenagers, you know, you just have to sort of get on with it. And it wasn't that at all.
Yeah. And if they find that their child's being bullied, what advice would you give them?
Go to the school. Find someone at the school who will listen to you. And
is that always the principal?
I don't think it is always the principal. I think at Waiheke High, it was one of the deans that I went to. I think some schools it might be the deputy principal. Find out who is the person in your child's school to talk to.
Mm.
Sometimes it can be worth approaching the teacher first. They may have noticed something.
Yeah.
But definitely don't... if you feel like you're not listened to, don't let it drop.
Mm.
You know, keep fighting that battle for your child until you get satisfaction.
Yeah. And with regards to social media, your suggestion is that parents don't allow their child on Facebook unless they feel really sure about how Facebook works. Yeah?
Yes, definitely.
And if they are on Facebook, if they're both on, you know, parents and children are on Facebook.
Monitor them.
Yeah.
You monitor them. You know, look at their Facebook. Look at what they're doing. Make sure that you actually can get into their Facebook, because you need to know what's going on.
And if they're seeing bullying on Facebook, what can that parent do?
They can report it. It will generally say who the person is that's doing the bullying. You can report it to Facebook. You can report it to the school. If you know the child's parents, you can approach the child's parents. Maybe. You've got to be very careful with that one.
Yeah. Blocking.
Blocking, definitely.
Yeah. And with regards to the Bully Project, if anyone wants to find out more about that or get involved, what can they do?
They can join us on Facebook. They can send me a personal message. I'm always happy to talk to people if they're having problems. If there's, sometimes people just need someone to listen to. That's all they need.
Yeah. Wendy, thanks for coming on. And Kirsty, thank you for sharing too. And so if parents want to find more about the Bully Project, they can jump online to jump on Facebook, The Bully Project Waiheke Island.
Yes.
And that's Wendy Richards welcomes PMs.
Yes.
PMs, they call them. So cool. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks for having us.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
And you're listening to Island Life, and it's Christina Patterson here this morning with Amelia Lawley. And Amelia's come in kindly on her Saturday morning to talk to us about water.
Water everywhere and not a drop to drink.
Yes. Well, not so. Yeah, exactly. So, Amelia... tell us about what's going on at this very moment in terms of education that's going out around the island at the moment.
We had a wee meeting a couple of weeks ago. That was a few of the social services and the water companies, somebody from the Health Trust, and a couple of, you know, interested citizens, shall I say, just to discuss last summer and look at some measures that could be put in place moving into the summer in the event that we do have another very dry season. So that resulted in a little group being put together to look at some education aspects or tactics, just to get people thinking sort of early on about how they can conserve the water they have now, and a plan around, you know, how to keep the system of deliveries running smoothly rather than getting choked up like it did last year.
Yeah.
With people sort of ordering in a blind panic with all three companies and then failing to cancel orders when they had a delivery from one of the three companies, which just was just so, just drove the guys crazy, you know, turning up at people's houses and finding that not only were they not actually out, they were full because one of the other guys had got there first because they hadn't cancelled their orders. So, yeah, so it was about sort of just prevention, really, or some sort of mitigating measures that we could we could come up with. And so the council, Auckland Council, have funded a leaflet, or are thinking about funding a leaflet that's going to go out to all the residences on the island. So we did a bit of work editing that because it was sort of a verbose and a lot of unnecessary stuff in there that doesn't apply to residents, certainly, because, you know, there's a huge amount of common sense on this island. You know, people have lived here for years. They know how to manage themselves. So it's about, you know, not to insult people and teach grandma to suck eggs, although my grandma's, neither of them ever sucked an egg. I don't actually understand that expression, but that's beside the point. And also then getting to the tourists, like trying to make sure the tourists who come and rent holiday homes actually just have a little guideline to how to best manage their water. Because, you know, when you're on a reticulated system, you don't think about it. You turn the tap on and water comes out.
Yeah.
When you've got a big fat tank sitting in your back garden, it's a very powerful, tangible manifestation of that is your water. That is all you have, you know.
Yeah.
And people who come for holidays here actually really need to be made mindful of that.
Yeah.
Again, without making it look like we're being bossy or treating them like they're idiots, you know.
Yeah.
So the idea of this leaflet is really just to, I don't know, just a really basic guide to how to conserve water. Really, really common sense things you can do that don't cost money. Yes, you can run out and buy gauges. Yes, you can go out and run out and buy dual flush mechanisms for your toilet. But you can also stick a brick in your system, half the amount of water per flush. You can go knock the side of your tank, you know, where it's hollow, it's empty. Where it isn't hollow, there's water. There's your, you know, there's your level.
Yeah, yeah.
These things are really simple. Mm. And just also around safety, you know, if you do get a tummy bug, you know, is it water related? When you know, if you've got concerns, go to the doctor.
Okay, so let's go through. I mean, and you know, bearing in mind that there are a lot of, we're not going over past history and why the shortage happened last year, because that's quite a contentious issue.
Yeah,
and there from what I understand from that meeting, it was agreed that there were multiple contributions to the problem last year, and so that this year there have been meetings between water delivery companies, and there have been meetings between discussions around water quotas and just a whole range of things, but focusing on education. And bearing in mind that there may be new people already that have arrived, it's quite a common thing, I think, isn't it, to arrive on the island at this time of year for us to live over the summer,
or
even maybe to move here.
Yep.
And there may be, I had heard a statistic that 50% of the island have only been here for 5 years or less.
Right, I haven't heard that one.
So it's interesting. Yeah. I don't know if it's actually true, but that's what I've heard. And as you said, not wanting to tell people how to suck eggs, but let's just go through it and say, in terms of deliveries, ordering water, what are we advising people to do?
Be really mindful at all times of how much water they have. Yeah. So, like I said, knock the tank or climb up and have a look. Get some idea of your daily water use. Whether that is maybe drawing a line along the side of the tank in the morning and then checking it and drawing another line the next morning to see how far it's gone down. Because it's going to be different for different households. I mean, me and my son, we use very little water because he doesn't like showering. And, you know, we have a gravity-fed tank. So whereas, you know, a family of five with a pump, they're going to go through heaps. So it's getting to understand how much you actually use, and then when you've got around 14 days worth of water left, that's probably the time to order.
Right.
Then the water companies aren't you know, under pressure with people freaking out, going, I haven't got any water, blah. Like, it can just be a measured, like, I've got 2 more weeks worth, so they'll schedule you in, you know, and that should all run smoothly. What was the question? Sorry.
So that's great. So when they're on the phone and ordering, so they've got 14, let's say they've got 14 days left. Mm-hmm. They've monitored their water. They understand how much their household uses, because it's going to range, isn't it, from person to person. So they've got 14 days left. When they get on the phone to the water company, what should they be saying?
They should be stating really clearly what they've got left, how long they anticipate that's going to last them. And also, where the tank is, man, that's a real big one. Like, people, you know, people's tanks. My tank is just, it's practically in heaven. It's so far off the road, you know, that there's only one company that can deliver to me because they've only got the hoses long enough. So making sure that the guys are actually going to really know how to do it, where to find it, what hoses they're going to need, what your driveway's like, all those sort of things. Access, really.
And what about any special needs in the family?
Yeah, of course, if you've got babies, little kids, anyone sick, anyone elderly, just anyone who's got high needs, really, it's a good idea to state that.
Because they will prioritise, won't they?
Certainly, if you're really out, definitely.
Okay, and when they've got 14 days, what's the quality of the water like?
Well, again, depending on what 14 days looks like to you, how much that is. I mean, certainly if you're down into the sort of lowest foot of water, you're looking at it's getting pretty murky, and that's a really good time to get your tank cleaned out.
Yeah.
And all the water companies, I think, apart from Waiheke Aqua, they do tank cleaning.
Yeah.
You can clean it yourself, although I know nothing about that, so I can't really comment on it. But, yeah, certainly, and, you know, get all the pipes flushed out, because if there's been no rain for a while and you've got pipes under the ground, the water that is collected in there will sit and it will go kind of nasty.
Yeah.
So when the guys come and fill the tank up, the good water comes through those pipes, washes the nasty water into the tank, and it can contaminate it.
And that has been their comment, that they often turning up to people who've got the most disgusting stuff sitting in the pipe that's leading to
and then
their
that
tank.
And then that reflects badly on them if people get sick, and it's like, oh, you gave us dirty water, and actually they didn't. The water's all filtered, it's all tested, it's all super clean. It's just what it's going on and on top of.
And so when it's really that low, it's quite likely that they've got yucky stuff in their pipes.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
So now, talking about people who, you know, really prices around about, from what I remember, it's around about $240, $250 for a 10,000 or 12,000
litre. Yeah, I don't know those off the
top. Yeah, it's something like that. So for a person who's really struggling to find the money for that, are there any options available to them?
Yep. There's the Work and Income Special Needs Grant for water, which is $500 maximum entitlement in a year period. So that's slightly confusing, because they'll only grant that in a one-off payment. So you're not going to get a $500 load of water, because it's physically impossible,
right?
Given the trucks and stuff. But you'll get, say, it's really kind of a vexed one, because if it's busy and you're just going to be scheduled in along with, you know, 10 other houses for the day, you'll just get whatever load they can deliver you based on the truck size and where they're going next, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll only get maximum $240 worth of water.
Yeah.
If you need a second load, you have to then go and basically negotiate with Work and Income, and you have to have exceptional circumstances, in inverted commas, and what those are is a complete mystery to me. You know, there doesn't seem to be any set criterion at all. So it's really a case of you have to go in there and try your luck. And, you know, anyone having any trouble with Work and Income and water, please ring us.
Because, so Amelia at Budgeting Services.
We dearly love to advocate in these sort of situations, because it's a crazily unfair policy. And it's not just for beneficiaries. This grant is not just for beneficiaries. It's for low-income owners as well, and that's means-tested. So I can't actually give you any idea of what the thresholds are.
So if someone, basically, what they can do is just ring WINS and find out, am I eligible? And in terms of tank size, so if they're getting delivered, there are smaller tanks on the island.
Yeah, there are some people, certainly with some, you know, the older rentals and stuff, little batches with those little corrugated iron tanks. You know, we had a client who's...
How many litres are in
one of our clients, it only held something like 800 gallons.
Right.
where, you
and what's
know,
that in metric? Oh,
bloody no, Jesus. sorry. Finn might know. Finn? No, it's my son. I don't know, but I know that this woman certainly, her tank could only hold about $110 worth of water. So she got $110 worth of water once from Working Income,
really hard,
and then wasn't allowed another one.
Yeah,
I mean, to me, that's just mental.
Mm.
I would definitely consider an 800-gallon tank to be an exceptional circumstance.
Yeah.
But they didn't.
Yeah.
So
that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the other issue is that if we have a drought like we did last time, what is the eligibility there? Does it
change? Well, they did last year. They actually relaxed that one load only policy, and people were able to access the second delivery much more easily.
And that was because they declared a
drought?
That
was because it was an official drought. Now, that didn't happen until, late February or something.
Yeah.
So there were lots of people really freaking out by then who weren't being given grants and couldn't afford to buy water. So
yeah, that's really tough.
But, you know, Waiheke's incredible. And people are so helpful.
Yeah.
And everyone I know was, you know, pulling together, letting neighbours come and do their washing. You know, the budgeting service had a shower. We had all sorts of waifs and strays coming in, having showers and doing their washing. You know, that's one great thing about living in a small community is that people do really pull together and look after each other.
And the budgeting service is amazing, what you do. Okay, so conserving water, just few tips.
Yeah, sure. Flushing the toilet is a big one that uses a lot of water. And, you know, there's that whole revolting slogan that I'm not even going to repeat about if it's yellow, et cetera, et cetera. It makes me feel slightly nauseous. That's fine. But, you know, it's also slightly unhygienic, especially if there's lots of people in the house and you're using lots of toilet paper because it can block up your septic. So you can just as easily get like a 2-litre bottle, plastic bottle, fill it with water, seal it and stick it in your system. That'll halve the amount of water that is used per flush.
Yeah, because it must be a weight thing, is it? That fills up the
it's a volume thing.
Volume, okay.
Yeah. It's the Eureka guy, you know, the one that jumped in the bath and jumped out of the bath and the levels went down. No, I can't remember his name. Archimedes, my 9-year-old son's just informing me. No? Okay. Somebody out there will know.
He's quite incredible, your 9-year-old.
I like him. Yeah, so there's that. Also, just collecting grey water. So when you're washing the dishes, you just use a bucket, put a bucket in the sink, and then chuck it on the garden. Same with the shower. When you're in the shower, put a bucket in it, stand over it, collect the water, chuck it on the garden, use it to flush the loo, whatever. Washing machines. People do washing for the most crazy amounts of items.
Yeah.
You know? Wait till it's full.
Yeah.
One load. You know.
And then use the when it's coming out, the wastewater.
Divert it.
Divert
into
it.
Into the garden or into buckets. And one rinse cycle. You can change your settings.
Yeah.
What else is on my little list? Oh, obvious things like turning off the tap when you're shampooing, shaving, toothbrushing, that sort of thing. Showers, just keep them really short. You can turn down your water pressure. It's common sense.
A lot of it is.
Yeah.
And if you don't know it, as a new person on the island, just ask a local and they'll be able to share all of this with you. But in terms of medical, in terms of medical, if you're finding that you've become sick or someone in your family has become sick and you're wondering if it's related to your water.
Yeah.
What's the advice around that?
Oh, just if you've got vomiting and diarrhea, just go to the doctor.
Yeah.
You know, if you're worried, if it's been, you know, a couple of days, or it doesn't even have to be a couple of days, it can be just how you feel, especially if it's your kids.
Mm.
Just go to the doctor.
Yeah.
Or ring the Healthline. Or ring Healthline, which I've got the number here if anybody wants
to hear
it.
So
it's 0800 611 116. So they can give you advice on whether you need to go to the doctor or not.
Yeah, on whether you need to go and how soon to go.
Yeah. And if you've got any doubts about the quality of your water and drinking it, either go buy drinking water or boil it. I mean, if you can afford to go buy it, that's great. But if you can't, boiling your water for 1 minute will make it safe.
So when their tanks are low, they should either go and buy, because it's likely to be murky and a bit yuck.
Yeah.
Good time to clean out their tank.
Mm-hmm.
if they they should be really buying drinking water at that point, yep, or boiling their water, yep, for yep, at least a minute, yeah?
And yeah, and I mean, if you've got, like I do, a plastic bottle phobia, you can go to Only Water on Tahi Road and basically, yep, buy a vessel from them, or, yep, or just take your own and just refill it from their taps. It's like 40 cents a litre. So okay, that's another alternative, you know, option if you don't want to be choking up the environment with plastic.
Good.
Yep.
Okay. Well, let's hope that we're not going to go into a drought again this summer.
Oh, the weather's just so gorgeous. It's, I mean, beautiful. It's hard to worry when the weather's so beautiful. You don't actually want to be constantly thinking, oh, shit, you know, it's just mean, you know.
Yeah.
But
we do kind of, when it rains, you do feel like doing a little dance, don't you?
You certainly do, you know. Yeah.
So, well, thanks for coming on, Amelia. And we, yep, should expect this brochure going out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Sometime, yep, soonish.
The wheels of bureaucracy move slowly. So we'll just,
we're hoping that the changes will be made. But, mm-hmm, of course, our Auckland Council, yeah, they decide, mm-hmm, exactly what goes, mm-hmm, on that.
They do, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
No worries.
Wakey Radio. And you're back with Island Life. This is Christina Patterson, and we're just mucking around with phones at the moment. I'm just going to get Denise Roche on the line, on air, because she's going to speak to us about the asset sale referendum. And you probably would have got your referendum voting papers out in the mail if you're on the election roll. And so if you haven't already made a decision and posted them off, this might be a good time just to hear, I guess, one side of the story. And I'll be talking to Denise and asking her a few questions about, I guess, the argument on the other side. So I'm also going to be talking to Jacqueline Taylor, my opinion. And we're back on air with Denise Roche. Hi, Denise. Can you hear me?
I can, Christina.
Thanks for bearing with me. So, and thanks for taking a little bit of time to come and talk to us. We're just, you know, obviously we've got asset sale referendum happening at the moment, and in people's letterboxes for people to vote. So, Denise, you're obviously, again, you know, being from the Green Party, you're against asset sales. Can you tell us why?
Yeah, sure. Well, it was the Greens that actually got ourselves organised to get the bulk of the signatures through to trigger the referendum in the first place. And we did that because we don't believe this government has a mandate to sell off what are essentially infrastructure that belongs to all New Zealanders, that we've already bought and paid for, and that we're already, that we need for the future. It just seems like such a kind of short-term ideological driven program from the government. So we're opposed to it because essentially we're selling off what is stuff that we can be using to generate more jobs and more income. And we're doing it for no good reason because, we could still be, viable economically without actually having to sell them. So, what happens is that we send the profits from our electricity companies and Air New Zealand, they basically will go offshore. This stuff about mum and dad investors is not proving to be true. And then it reduces the income that we already get from those state assets, like our electricity generating company. And it increases prices as well. And that's been proven, that's what's happened in Australia with the electricity companies. Once you start to privatise them, the reason for shareholders buying those shares is so that they make a profit. That means prices go up. Right. And people are already struggling to pay their electricity bills as it is.
So part of it is, from your perspective, is ownership, but part of it is also price hikes. Is that true? Have I got that right?
Yeah.
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 So one of the arguments has been that that the government has no business owning business.
Oh, right, the private sector does it better. Yeah, right. That happened with Air New Zealand last time, and that's why we had to buy it back. Same with Kiwi Rail, we had to buy it back. I mean, this is essential infrastructure for the running of our country.
Mm.
So once you start flogging it off, then we have bugger all autonomy, and we're selling our knowledge. You know, we are you know, at the top of the world in terms of the technology around renewable energy production. And we've got a lot of technical knowledge about that. We flog that knowledge off and as part of the share sales, then we have no control over it, and we can't use it to leverage for more research and development and more technology development, you know, which will benefit us all in the future. It's just such short-term thinking.
It's okay. And in terms of also in terms of our debt, the debt in New Zealand. Now, another argument is that you know, that when you know, as a family, as a, you know, if you're in debt, the logical thing is to sell your assets in order to free your debt, because it is the income that you get from your assets is often a lot less than the interest or what you're paying on your back on your debts.
Yeah, but you have to think about this not as a family. Think of it as a business, which is what it is.
Yeah.
If you're a carpenter and your business is building houses, you don't sell your tools.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and that's exactly what this is doing. What this program is about. It is, you know, these are profitable businesses that are pouring money back into New Zealand. Even our rate of borrowing, we would be paying more and paying less in borrowing than what we're earning. Sorry, hang on. We're earning more from our assets than what it would cost us to borrow more to keep us afloat, if that's what we need.
Okay. Denise?
So what we've got is we've got high-performing companies, yeah, that are giving the economy a real boost. We're flogging them off so that we don't generate that income anymore. That's crazy.
Mm. Okay.
And we've already spent $260 million preparing those assets for sale. I mean, you know, that's crazy.
And what do you think the outcome, let's just say that the referendum overwhelmingly shows that New Zealanders are against asset sales, what do you think that referendum will say to, you know, this government? What do you think the response will be?
Well, the reason we were so keen to do the referendum in the first place and why we worked so hard to get one was, even though it is not a binding referendum, they're not binding, it's a clear political signal to the government that they're on notice. So this referendum means that if we win, that the government is out of here come November next year.
So is your expectation that, similar to the last referendum, that they will ignore it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. They've already said they will. But that is not the point. The point is that the government has said all along that they have a mandate to sell this. We don't believe they do. A referendum with a million vote cast, which is what we want, so people really need to fill out their forms and post them back. And the government has been very cynical about this. They have timed the referendum so that it's just after the local body. We're heading into Christmas, so everybody's like kind of
wanting to head to the beach. Yep, yep.
Yeah, and it's a postal ballot. Yep. And as we know from the turnout in local government elections, postal ballots return a much lower turnout.
Mm.
So we're working our butts off at the moment. I'll be doing some banner waving and stickering and leafleting from now for the next 3 weeks. So to get as many votes in as we can, because we need to show this government that no, just because they managed to cobble together a wafer-thin majority to form their government, they do not have a mandate to sell what belongs to our future generations and us.
Denise, thanks so much for joining us.
No, you're welcome, Christina. Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Thanks.
Okay.
And we were speaking to Denise Roche at that moment from the Green Party, one of our local community members and obviously a Member of Parliament for the Green Party. We're just also now going to speak to Jacqueline Taylor, who is what I'd like to term our opinionated Waiheke woman. And yep, she's just going to sit down in front of that microphone right there, Jacqueline, and just pop it right close to you to you, and I'll put you on. And Jacqueline, you've got a very strong opinion about asset sales, and what's your take on this referendum, and I guess about asset sales for New Zealand?
Good morning, Christina.
Good morning.
And good morning to... Oh, it's actually afternoon now.
Oh,
oh well, there
morning.
We are. Got that wrong to
no,
start
no,
with.
No, 20 minutes to go.
Okay. I wouldn't say that I'm just necessarily an opinionated Waiheke woman. I'm a positively stroppy, politically savvy one too, and I encourage... all people on Waiheke, whether they're female or not, to be that way, actually. Because to me, the saddest thing is how easy it is these days to disempower so many people when they can be convinced that they don't have power. We do have power, okay? We have the power of thinking, and we have the power of being able to look at things in a really rational way. So today, I'm not representing anybody in a political sense. I'm not actually representing anybody in a group sense, although, you know, I have to admit, I was part of Air Tears Not For Sale. I was one of the founding people. I marched 3 times. I encouraged people to march. I thought it was really important. The only problem is marching does, you know, a lot of wonderful things to your body. Makes you feel really good when you get all those feelings out as well. But at the end of the day, unfortunately, it doesn't always change things. Mm. And the one thing, you know, just listening to Denise quickly there, is unfortunately when you're up against people who do have a lot of power and authority and money and a very, very clever outfit, putting words out there that, you know, normal people have that may not necessarily understand, or they may be easily confused. As an ex word spinner myself, whoa, there's a confession. But yeah, as an ex word spinner myself, who's actually on the good side, not the bad side now, let me tell you that you can do a lot of things with words, and you can disempower people. So, asset sales. Okay, I made a few notes here, and basically, I want to give you a quick example that is really simple. I know Waiheke people love just the simple things. So, all right, imagine that we've got our school, all right, and all the kids that go to our school get to do cool things at that school, all right, and they do that because generations of people before them, parents and children, have fundraised, and they have given this school heaps of cool stuff, yeah? And then suddenly they get this new headmaster who's a bit of a gambler, a bit of a chancer, a bit of a trader, a bit of a wide boy, all right? And he suddenly decides, oh, no, we want to do other stuff. So you know what? We are going to make kids pay to do the cool stuff with the cool things, with the cool, yeah. And so the kids suddenly are told, their parents are told, you have to pay. You have to pay to do this cool stuff. And the kids go home really upset and say to their parents, well, we're going to have to suddenly pay to do all this cool stuff. And the parents go, well, I've just been made redundant, or actually, I've just been put on short time. I'm on a contract. I don't know where the money's... you can't do it anymore. And only the rich kids, only the, you know, the kids whose parents are doing well, only they can do that. Is that fair? No. Okay, that's the analogy as a children's writer as well, with one of my other hairdos on, that I want to give you, and that is our asset sales, okay? Way before I came to this country, all right, which was 25 years ago, generations of older New Zealanders worked their little tushes off to build these assets, all right? These power these wonderful power cut. And now... I think that's exactly why grey power, to be honest with you, got so upset. So, you know, the government likes to choose, it likes to pick its opposition and its enemies. It likes to go, oh, those awful Labour people, oh, they all did it. Well, that was a cock-up. Well, when they did it, excuse my language, but no doubt about it, it was a mess. So, if anything, that should give us a really good example. Why are this lot doing it then? And they will say, oh, no, but it's only partial. Oh, it's only partial. That's what they say all the time. Oh, no, it's only partial. Well, can I tell you something? Private public partnerships at the moment are a flipping disaster. I could give you so many examples. We'd be here till Christmas, and I actually want to get out and go to the market later to persuade lots of lovely, politically savvy, positively stroppy Waihikians to pop back home before they go to the beach or the bar or the barbecue today and pop a tick in the no box and put it in the post real quick, and then you go back and doing all the cool things. I want to remind these people, all right, that this government is actually doing everything that it can, all right, to delude us that this is a good deal. And even the politically savvy, stroppy, positively, economically erudite people, all right, in the papers are saying this is nonsense. So if you had the time, which most people don't, I do, but to read the political and the economical commentators, the economic commentators who go, well, you know, we should be doing this for the country. Yeah, I agree. Okay. I actually do believe that we do need to sell some of the things that New Zealanders are good at, but not our basic commodities. So we should not be selling our power companies. We should not be selling our water. We should not be giving any of that control to anybody else. Okay? They know that too. Government cherry picks. Oh, no, those terrible Labour people. Oh, they do. Look, all those terrible Greenies, they never want to do anything. Oh, everything's no. And then, all those silly Grey Power people, look at them now. I listen to Talkback. I talk on Talkback every now and then when it amuses me, because it's so easy. When you actually understand what shock bloggers and shock jocks do, all they do is they put a sentence out there, which I could quite easily reverse, actually, because anybody can. And everybody's suddenly, whoa, those dreadful people, whoa, they don't want any progress. Well, actually, yes, we do. But what we don't want to do, exactly as Denise said, and as the point is we don't want to make it more unfair than it is. I am an advocate for people who are less fortunate, who can't always write the letters they need to write, ring the people they need, haven't got time to sit on the phone. Neither do I, actually. But some people need people to sit on the phone for them and say, this isn't fair, can you please help me? And I do that, okay? And there are a lot of people who cannot afford to pay their power bills. Actually, they can't even afford to put food on their table at the moment. So the fact that other people here are being encouraged, incentivized, I could say actually bribed, that'd be a terrible word to use, wouldn't it? But it's quite a just word, bribed to buy these shares when others can't afford it, I personally find disgusting. And I used to be one of the people who used to be able to afford to buy these shares.
Jacqueline Taylor, that's our opinionated Waiheke woman for this morning, and following after Denise Roche, both of them encouraging you to tick no on the asset sale referendum paper.
So listen, this is something for all of you. Doesn't matter what colour your politics are, this is common sense, okay? Basically, if you keep being told over and over again, I've met many National supporters, ACT supporters even, God forbid, that's a dying breed, United for you, all sorts, okay? If you are being told, all right, that you are powerless and that something can't be done, sadly, if people say that to you enough times, a lot of people believe that. Take that power back. Take that power back. It's easy. Open your envelope, tick your little box, put it in the post, and go and have a nice cold beer and lie down on the beach or whatever it is that floats your boat. But please, I want a million people, me personally, that's what I've said, a million people saying, no, John Key, that's a big fat porky pie that we all believe in your asset sales program. We don't.
Thanks to Jacqueline Taylor for coming along this morning. Wonderful to have you. Always good to have an opinionated Waiheke woman.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.